Hey, greetings, ladies and gentlemen. Lieutenant Colonel Alan West here, and welcome to the Steadfast and Loyal Podcast.
Hey folks, Lieutenant Colonel Alan West here at Watchtower Firearms. This is the custom design AR-15 that was just made for me. It's got my Steadfast and Loyal logo there. On this side, you can see my signature, my master parachutist wings, of course, American flag. And I just want to tell you that you can't be a great American unless you have a great American weapon. And that's exactly what Watchtower Firearms is building. Great American weapons, all American parts, manufactured right here in the great state of Texas. And oh, by the way, where is the serial number on this one? TX-1836. If you're from Texas, I think you know what that means. God bless you. God bless Watchtower.
Hey, dead center. Yes.
Hey, greetings, everyone. Lieutenant Colonel Alan West here at the Steadfast and Law Podcast. What we're doing is we're looking at some of these national congressional races since, you know, everything's pretty much so done here locally and statewide in Texas, although we do have some runoffs. And one of the elections that we're looking at comes out of New York, Congressional District 16. If you don't know, that's the congressional district that is occupied by the guy I call Fire Marshal Bill. Maybe you remember in Living Color and Jim Carrey's character, Fire Marshal Bill, because Jamal Bowman seems to have a thing for pulling fire alarms in the United States Capitol, if you remember that. But also, he is a very radical individual, pro-Hamas, and some of the things that have come out of his mouth, it seems treasonous to me. So Chris Wright is challenging Jamal Bowman in New York, Congressional District 16, and Chris Wright was born in Georgia. He is an Army brat, so he was born down there at Fort Stewart, Georgia, the home of the 3rd Infantry Division, and he was raised in Maryland. His father served in the United States Army as a career and instilled in him a deep sense of patriotism. Chris moved to New York in 2013 to pursue his own American dream, an entrepreneur and conservative activist. Chris Wright founded a small business and is the president of the Conservative Republican Alliance of New York. He was a vocal opponent to the authoritarian lockdowns, shutdowns, and mandates imposed by Governors Cuomo and Hochul and Mayors de Blasio and Adams. And he stood up for the police. He stands for our children and our freedoms. And he is running for this congressional district to protect our liberties and to preserve that American dream. Chris Wright, thanks for joining us here at the Steadfast and Loyal Podcast.
Thank you very much, Colonel Alan West. I appreciate it. And thank you for the opportunity for having me come on the show and speak to our fellow Americans out there. I really appreciate it.
Well, give us a little bit more about your background. Like you say, born and raised down there in Hinesville. Your father was in the military. What was it that, you know, formulated your conservative principles and philosophy of governance? What was that turning point for you?
That's a good question. I would say it's one of my earliest memories in life. My dad, like I said, served in the Army. He was an Army major veteran. And, you know, when we lived in Germany for 5 years when I was growing up. We were stationed over at the 2 military bases over there, Baumholder and Mannheim.
I know them both.
Yes. So I grew up there as a child. 5 years we spent over there. One of my earliest memories in life, as I like to tell people, is watching the Berlin Wall fall as a little boy.
Yeah.
And, you know, as a kid, you know, you're watching that. You're not really fully, you know, your brain's not fully, you know, comprehending what you're witnessing at the moment. You know, I tell people all the time, I witnessed, you know, people receive freedom before I could even spell the word freedom, you know. And so I just watching those things, you know, just watching G.I. Joe growing up at home and then watching my dad come home from being out in the base and had the fatigues on with the captain helmet and everything. It just, those things were just ingrained in me without me realizing it. And I think the first time I really felt it in my heart was, you know, after seeing the Twin Towers collapse and everything like that happened in that situation. That was my first sense of patriotism I really felt inside my heart just kind of rave out. And I just didn't realize it was that much in me because I never had an issue with America. You see a lot of youth, there's oh, this America, country's against me and I'm a black man in America and I can't do this, I can't do that. Always, you know, quick to play victim. But I never had that sense of victim growing up in my life. Yeah. I just knew when 9/11 happened that they're attacking my country and, you know, this is wrong. And I feel this strong sense of patriotism because of that. So I just think it was instilled in me since childhood is where it comes from.
Well, you know, and my wife, Angela, is an Army brat. Her dad came from Jamaica, joined the military, and she grew up through the military. I think that kids that grow up in the military have a different perspective because they've traveled to other countries, they've seen things, and they've had other experiences. You know, I remember, you know, speaking of Germany, when I was stationed in Italy as a paratrooper in 1985, we got a chance to go through Checkpoint Charlie. But when you say Checkpoint Charlie today, most people don't know what it meant. And that's when you crossed over from West Berlin into East Berlin. And so I can just imagine the impact of you, you know, being there in Germany at a time when that wall came down. And you're right. You got to see the extension of the liberties and freedoms of the West to these people that have been trapped behind that wall. So do you think it would be a good thing for more of our young men and women? Of course, right now, the recruitment levels are not good. But to get that experience of being overseas, to serve something that is greater than themselves, to give them that sense and not just sit back and say, America sucks. I've never been anywhere, never seen anything different, but America sucks.
Oh, yes, definitely, for sure. You know, I tell people all the time, you know, especially when I see there's so much this anti-America rhetoric going on amongst my generation, a lot of millennials. You know, I'm the older millennial, Xennial. I like to make that clear. I'm not the younger millennial, but, you know, there's a lot of that kind of attitude going on. And the reason I never had that attitude is because I tell you all the time, people say, oh, you know, they do the whole, oh, you know, you're a black man, you know, there's white privilege going on. You'll never be able to do this. You'll never be able to do that. I'm like, growing up as a kid, my dad was the highest ranked officer on base. So I never grew up thinking like, you know, my white friends or my Hispanic friends or my Asian friends, because, you know, being on base, you have all races.
Absolutely.
I would go to friends' homes and sometimes sit Indian style to eat food at dinner with their Asian, you know, families and everything. So I thought as a child, this was normal to have all these different cultures and races around you, to, you know, have a father who's the highest ranked, you know. I never grew up just thinking like I needed help. I don't know, government, please come help me. Oh, you know, I won't be able to fully do anything in this country. Now, my dad used to always give me a quote growing up. He says, now, you know, you sit me down. He would say in front of my sister sometimes, you know, she wasn't a big fan of it, but he said, you know, you can do anything in this country as a black man. You might have to work a little bit harder at certain things, but there's nothing in this country you can't accomplish. And as growing up as a young man, that stuck with me, and as going into manhood and dealing with life and the tough times came, I never threw in the towel because I'm just like, you know what, there's nothing I can do about it. It is what it is. You know, I'm a black man in America. What else can I, you know, I never for a second had that. And I was able to get through some tough times and meet great people while I was getting through those tough times of different, you know, cultures and backgrounds, just like it was growing up on a military base. So when I got through those times, I had people that were in my circle who I could bring in, who I could trust. And I tell people all the time, if I would have played the race games, identity politics games, and, oh, if you ain't my brother, you ain't black, you know, you can't be over here, then I would have, unfortunately, you know, lost some great relationships with some good people that helped me build in life. So, you know, people, I tell people all the time, if you have an opportunity to get in the military, if you have children, got a family especially, and you're young, and you're trying to figure life out still on your own, the military is not a bad option. You know what I mean? Because the military will take care of you. They'll, you know, like I said, give you opportunities to see the world at a young age. My sister, she still travels. Like she's a military brat, you know? So it's just instilled in her at this point, you know?
Well, the interesting thing is that what you're talking about comes back to Dr. King's famous quote that, you know, we're not supposed to be looking at the color of the skin, but the content of the character. And there are so many people that want to look at us as minorities, as blacks, you know, Hispanics, whatever. And they want us to have that sense of being a victim and not a sense of being a victor. And so when I look at you and the things that you believe in, it's the complete opposite of Jamal Bowman. So tell us about what inspired you to, first of all, get involved with Republican Party politics. And now, why are you taking the step to run for this congressional district?
Okay. Yeah, that's a good question. Well, you know, just to kind of give you a little bit of background when it comes to my politics. I've always been kind of interested in politics when I was younger. My mom was, was the one who got the, like, my dad was like the military, patriotism side for, my mind. And my mom was more, got me into politics at a young age. And I would say, when I was growing up, I was a Democrat. I campaigned for Obama in 08 when I was young and everything like that. Yes, we can, the whole, shebang. I was young and naive, But as time went by, I would consider the Republican Party. I was looking at, initially it was Ron Paul and Herman Cain in 2012 was the first candidates I was looking at, taking that serious, because after 4 years of Obama, I said, you know what, this is not what I attended. What is out there other than on a Democratic side? What Republican options? And I did like those two options. And I felt the mainstream media had a lot to do with those two gentlemen not having an opportunity to be the Republican candidate at the time. So when 2016 came around, I again, after 8 years of Obama, I was definitely, because I ended up voting for Obama again. But after 8 years of Obama, I was just done. I was just like, I can't do this. This guy's talking about transgenders in the girls' room and all kinds of stuff I never even could imagine. So, the Republican Party was had Dr. Ben Carson coming out and running. And I grew up, my dad, was Seventh-day Adventist. He met Dr. Ben Carson a couple of times. I read his book, Gifted Hands, when I was younger. I was very familiar with the gentleman. So when he was running for office, I was all on board already. I just had a lot of knowledge about him, the first, surgeon to separate Siamese twins from the brain. So the guy was, highly respected in my household. So I was looking at him first, and then I saw the media kind of stepped in, and they kind of do what the media does best. And he kind of took the West Point situation, the narrative that he just pretty much stated he talked with an administrator from West Point, but they took and flipped it and said, oh, there's no paperwork that you were confirmed that you were accepted to West Point. And he never said that. He just said that he spoke with an administrator from there and just told him thank you, but no thanks, because he didn't want to serve his 2 years in the military after graduating like you do if you go to military college. So, they twisted around and I saw that. And then after that, I was kind of like ready to say, you know what? I'm about to give up, because we don't decide our commander in chief. It's the media that does. That's kind of the, mind state I had at that point. And I saw there was an interview that Trump had at the time where he was sitting down with a young lady. And it's a popular like meme now at this point. But at the time, it was like just a fresh interview where they were interviewing. And she was just trying to like corner him in some kind of like, little media circle. Oh, yeah, you said this, but just twisting his words around they were trying to do. But he was able to kind of, they can't remember the exact conversation, but he was able to just, finagle and flip it around on them, where she was froze up and she was kind of like, what do I say? And he was like, well, come on, get it out, honey. Like, like joking around with her. And I saw that. I honestly, I enjoyed it, because I was so fed up with the media at that point. The mainstream media made clear that to see somebody who just knew how to stand up to them and deal with them, I automatically liked that part about him. I just honestly didn't take Trump seriously at first. I thought he was just trying to build his
There was a
brand up.
lot of people that didn't.
Yeah, exactly. So I just, I didn't have an issue with him. I just was like, Trump, come on, man. You're just trying to put the Trump brand out there. Hey, I ran for president. Buy my new steaks. Something like that. But when I saw that, I said, okay, Trump, what are your policies? So I started researching him, and I saw he was the only one that was talking about securing the border, lowering taxes, going after China when it comes to the trade deal situations. So he was talking about policies that I enjoyed, and I was, really on board with him on his policies. So I decided to come out and support him as president. And that was technically the first time in my life voting for a Republican was for Trump. And that's what got me to get involved in the Republican Party as a voter. And when it comes to running against Jamal Bowman, I've looked at Jamal for quite a bit of time. There are some people, that are close to me that wanted me to run against him, and I just saw it as a very long shot for a long period of time, and I just didn't really want to do it, because I saw, like, if I'm going to do something, I always had that mindset. If I'm going to try to do something, I want to have opportunity to win. I don't want to just do it just to put my name out there and get views and likes and get a few followers on social media and that's it. Now he's no. Do I seriously? Can I seriously win? Can I seriously benefit my fellow citizens in this country? So when I saw what he did with, there are a couple of things. So first and foremost, of course, we all know, like you mentioned, the fire alarm situation. I saw how he pulled the fire alarm, interrupted Congress. To me, way worse than what happened on January 6th, and the fact that they swept it under the rug, like nothing happened. And then I saw how his smug attitude afterwards. They were interviewing, trying. He's just kind of like, talking like, yeah, what are you going to do, kind of thing, that kind of attitude. And so when I kind of looked more into the individual himself, I saw that, he was pro Hamas. you know, pro sanctuary city with the legal alien situation. It's affecting a lot of New Yorkers, and it's insane what's going on here in New York with the legal alien situation. What's going on with a lot of Jewish people who are small business owners being who are and also college professors who happen to be Jewish who are dealing with this anti-Semitic situations going on here in New York. So there's a lot of things that are affecting New Yorkers right in their face, and it's you can't hide it. And before I felt like he was able to kind of play like a Kathy Hochul, stand in the distance. Our governor's name, Kathy Hochul, by the way, for people who are listening, and stand in the distance and let things kind of get corrupt, but not speak on it, and hopefully kind of just let it pass over, and you keep on doing corrupt things in the background. But with Jamal Bowman, it started coming to a lot of New Yorkers' forefront in their faces. And with New Yorkers, they're not quiet. So when they started seeing on Thanksgiving Day these legal aliens skipping them in line and taking the turkeys and everything like that, they let it be heard. So I just wanted to say, you know what? This the time is now. There's blood in the water. If a real deal America stepped up right now at this period of time, and because people are looking for solutions, they're looking for answers. They're tired of the same old career politicians with the suit and ties reading off a teleprompter. They want solutions. So if somebody came in there and could offer them solutions to what they're seeing that's happening right in their front and their face in their neighborhoods, they would perhaps for the first time consider voting Republican. So that's what maybe come to that decision to actually run for office against Jamal Bowman was pretty much I'm seeing, you know, the Democrats are just making so many mistakes right now at the point, and so many New Yorkers are being affected that it's almost like, yeah, strike where the kettle's hot. Like you see
now,
them now.
Congressional District 16, what area does that cover in and around New York City, if I'm correct?
Yes, it's in and around New York City. It's more now when it comes to the boroughs, the borough that it hits is the Northern Bronx area, is where that covers that area, and also the Westchester area as well. And the Westchester area that, you know, that includes White Plains, North White Plains, New Rochelle, East Chester, you have Yonkers, Mount Vernon, a lot of those areas around that area as part of those district as well.
Now, when you look at the demographic breakdown, political demographic breakdown, I would presume it's a D plus whatever district. Do you think that there's enough discontent and dissent in that congressional district that people are saying, you know, we've got to have something different. We've got to have an alternative. You know, I had Tina Forte on, and she's talking about how that congressional district started to look like a third world country. Do you think that that level of pain has gotten to the point where people are looking for something different?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I think when it comes to there's two like groups, and I briefly mentioned them before, but, you know, I'll bring back up again. I think in just the minority community, you know, when it comes, and, you know, people get all funny sometimes when it comes to that word. I'm just, you know, talking mainly, you know, Asian, Hispanic, you know, just people of color, whatever you want to use. A lot of those individuals are very upset with the legal alien situation. And a third group I'm going to throw in there, now I'm thinking about it, that I've spoken with who I feel are the most upset, who when I speak to them and sit down with them, who have the most, you can hear in their voice when they're speaking, are legal citizens.
Yeah.
In New York, we have plenty in New York, as we know. This is, you know, look at history of this country, legal immigration. New York is right at the top of the list there. And so when you're talking to people who had to work hard and, you know, go through the whole process and love this country, who want to be a part of this country, and they finally get that citizenship just to see somebody break the law and just pass over them over in within a 24-hour span, it's just the anger. And I don't blame them. I can only imagine being in their shoes and going through that whole process and dealing with that. So, you know, I would say, you know, when it comes to the Jewish people, small business owners, they're feeling the wrath of what's going on with this pro-Hamas, you know, far leftist socialist kind of way of thinking happening here in New York City. You know, you see it with the colleges, you see the universities, you see there was a college professor who was in her, that was like locked herself in her classroom because there's college students were threatening her so much for being, you know, she was a Jewish woman and everything like that. And, you know, being anti-Hamas and all that, though, so they were, you know, threatening her and everything like that. So you're seeing it with that group of people, you know, and you're seeing it, like I said, with the minority community, with the situations with the debit cards are giving these illegal aliens, are giving them, you know, schooling. They're talking about, you know, gun rights now, voting rights they're trying to give them. So it's everything that's down the list. And people, like I said, you talk, and it's, I've noticed it from 2016 to now. In 2016, you know, I was one of the few, trust me, wearing a MAGA hat could have gotten you serious trouble in New York. You better, you know what you're doing, know where you're going. You know, don't just walk around thinking it's all fine and dandy. We got a president out of New York here. And that wasn't the case in 2016.
Yeah.
Compare 2016 to now. You walk through New York and talk with people, there's a lot of people who are fed up. There's a lot of people who are saying they're going to be voting for Trump in 2024, who were definitely weren't saying in 2020, who wouldn't even dare even utter those words in 2016. So I saw the shifts. I saw the 2016, you know, they were ripping people out of cars, jumping people wearing MAGA hats, to 2020 and just, you know, lying, discrediting the man. But it was less tension, but it still was a lot of tension there, to now where people are just like, you know what? I was making money under President Trump.
Yeah.
I'm just looking at him like, not so crazy, am I?
And so illegal immigration, the illegal immigrants that are flooding to the streets there, and, you know, they're getting at the front of the line, being a taxpayer-funded benefits. Also, do you think that the economy is another big issue? And what would be the third issue for the people there in your congressional district that you can connect with them on to draw a clear delineation and separation between yourself and Jamal Bowman?
Yeah, very good question. Yeah, I think the economy is a very, very big issue. You know, when it comes to what's going on here, people are dealing with a lot of inflation here in New York City. And that's one of the biggest complaints. You know, people talk about when they go to the grocery store, how, you know, a carton, some milk and, you know, some eggs would cost them just barely any money. You know, when Trump was in office, to now it's like breaking the bank when they're like, it's like they're paying a monthly bill when they go to the grocery store, you know, and people I'm talking with are, that's a big issue that they're dealing with. The job market is another situation that people are complaining about that I speak with, because they're talking about now how a lot of illegal aliens are taking up a lot of these everyday Americans' jobs in the middle class to upper middle class range. And that's something that I've seen. Like, I talked with a young lady the other day that said she went, and it's been taking a while to find work. And she finally got to find a job that, you know, gave her an opportunity to go in for an interview. When she went in there, there was about 50 people in this room before she got into one-on-one with the manager for an interview. And she says about 80% of them were illegal aliens. And wow. None of them spoke English. And it was just like, it was like a madhouse. And she said when she finally got into the interview, there was her and there was the, oh, I'm sorry, hold on 1 second. Sorry about that, Colonel Allen. I got my...
You can edit it.
All right, excellent.
There we go.
All right. So, she said, so she went to do the interview and she said that there was, you know, her and the manager that she was speaking with, speaking in English to her. And then they had two other people giving interviews, speaking in other languages nearby while she was doing the interview. So even while she was doing the interview, it wasn't a one-on-one experience. It was one in, you know, so they were like, it was like a tuna can hiring process. And she just said, and she's been unemployed for on unemployment for a little over a year. And she says she didn't realize how bad it's gotten in the job market when it comes to finding work in New York. And I was telling her, if you haven't been trying to find work in New York in the last couple of years, it's a whole different ballgame right now. So, you know, that is something that I'm going to definitely be reaching out to, is talking with people about the economy situation, the inflation that people are dealing with, the struggles going on, the higher taxes, talk about what's going on with the job market, talk about what's going on with the crime situation in New York. Crime is out of control in New York. You hear about almost every other day, there's a situation you hear about on the train stations here, you know, somebody waiting for a bus, you know, getting attacked or jumped and stuff like that. There's a video of a woman getting in a fist fight, a black woman getting a fist fight with a illegal alien. I believe it was in the Bronx. And, you know, guys recording that situation like that and everything like that. So it's just crime is rampant in New York City. And if you go to places like the Roosevelt Hotel in Manhattan, you see the illegal aliens camped out at night. I mean, if you go out there real late, for those who want to go out there 2, 3 a.m., they're laid out in the streets, literally. I don't know where to explain. I mean, you hear stories of them leaving feces and urine on people's doorsteps in the Manhattan, and these people are people paying $4,000 or $5,000 a month for rent. So, you know, this is not some, you know, shanty town they're in, you know, middle of nowhere. So, yeah, there's a lot of people upset right now. And I think if somebody could just offer these people, you guys, well, you're upset, and just saying, oh, yeah, just telling them what they're upset about, because they know what they're upset about. So there's a lot of people that could come out and say, oh, yeah, do a podcast, this is what's going on, and get a lot of views and a lot of likes, get a lot of subscribers from that. But they're not really going to bring change. I'm saying right now, if somebody can come up in a political sphere right now and step up and offer a solution, you, who one, can get a lot of support, and two, you can actually possibly bring change. And I think that's what politicians, what our forefathers made these roles for, was to bring change in dire times when you're dealing with tyrannical times. is to have everyday Americans step up in order to bring change using these positions of power, and not in a corrupt way, in a career political way, but actually use them to bring policies that benefit the citizens of the state and the country.
If I'm at a grocery store, and imagine the political grocery store, and this is metaphorically thinking, I'm walking down the aisle, CD 16, and I've got on one side of the aisle Jamal Bowman, and I have the other side of the aisle Chris Wright. What's the biggest delineation and difference between you and Jamal Bowman, the incumbent?
Okay, the biggest one, you're going to see one side. You're going to see a guy who's formerly a member of the Democrat Socialists of America, and probably, you know, I'm assuming still is. You know, he supports communism. He supports illegal aliens over citizens. He, you know, and this is the most un-American individual. This is the representation of where America's heading, where the Democratic Party is. I don't know if it's been taken over or it's about to be taken over, or where exactly what stage of the process is that. But what, and when you see on the right side, my last name, Christopher Wright, when you look on the right side, you're going to see a man who loves his country, loves, who's the definition of a nationalist. I don't look at the word nationalist and back away. I look at that and say, I'm a man proud of his country, who loves his country, who loves the citizens of his country, who wants to serve the citizens of his country. So if you are looking at both aisles and you're saying, okay, what do I pick as a citizen? What's going to benefit me the most? You're going to want to pick the person that's going to look at Americans first. If you are a citizen of this country, that means if you were born and raised here, that means second generation, third generation, that means you could have just immigrated over here 6 years ago and just got your citizenship 2 days ago. But that makes you American. I'm going to do whatever it takes to make sure that all the policies that I get passed are going to benefit my fellow Americans. Because I stand by what I've heard growing up in school. You hear United we stand, divided we fall. You hear about the power of we the people. You hear these terms that we've used in school so many times, but I want to actually implement those terms to help out my fellow Americans. So that's what you're going to get on my side. And when, on that side, I mean, history tells you to pass socialism and communism. It's all communism. I mean, I don't even like using socialism. It's all communism. And I learned from childhood the dangers of communism. That's why when I was growing up, even when America was in the 90s, when we were benefiting and the economy was booming, everything was looking good. And I had my friends growing up in Maryland, right next to D.C., 90% D.C.'s 90% Democrat, for those who don't know. We're just as blue as New York and Maryland. So I had kids drawing little communist, you know, symbols in their notebooks and everything like that. And I never was for that. I thought it was dumb when I was a teenager. I didn't really fully understand the political side of it. But I know that anything related with that group is foolish. And then I got older and learned about the history of the party, history of communism and Karl Marx and everything like that. And definitely was what nothing to do with it. But that's what you're going to get. It's what you look at today. When you go down that grocery store, if you're a citizen of America, you're going to want to go on the right side. But if you are an illegal alien, a criminal who believes in bail reform and breaking laws and, you know, causing tyranny, terrorism, you know, raping, pillaging, the whole nine. Sorry about that. The whole nine, then you're going to go on the left side. And that's where I stand on the matter. And that's why I feel the difference between both sides is going to be.
Will there be a debate, you believe, between yourself and Congressman Bowman? Because, you know, the incumbents, they tend to not want to be confronted. They want to try to skate through. Is there a way that you can force him into debating you?
I like to say yes. And that's why I'm kind of looking at it where, you know, from, you know, I know when it comes to, I don't like identity politics whatsoever, because, you know, you know, living in New York and just being in identity politics, you know, mainly any place that's majority Democrats, I'm sure is like that. But New York City is like the dark blue in that area. So, you know, they're big on identity politics and playing that role. But I tell people all the time, in order to beat the Democrats, sometimes you got to beat them at their own game.
Yeah.
So I knew, you know, that was a part of, not, that was the major part at all. I thought that the guy's policies were terrible and the policies that I was standing on would be strong and would be able to help out New Yorkers. But when I looked at Bowman, that's something that I did come back in my mind is, you know, they can't just, you know, look at me and say, oh, you know, if I'm making a lot of sense and bring policies that benefit people, unfortunately, it's going to be New Yorkers that are just going to see skin color and say, oh, he's a white man or whatever. I don't want to hear it. I don't care. is going to shut me out automatically. And that's unfortunate times we're living in certain areas of America, but that's where we're at. So I said, yeah, I think I would use that to my advantage in terms of, hey, you know, don't try to run away from me and just say, oh, he's just some old white guy, old rich white guy. He's just racist. Don't listen to him. He won't be able to use that card like, you know, he would definitely use if I was a white man who's a Republican running for office. So I think with me just, and also the fact that I do have a platform for myself, I've been an activist for the past 5 years here in New York. I started with the walkaway movement. I was the first minority to share a walkaway story of why I left the Democratic Party. Uh-huh. And a person named Brandon Strock, a good friend of mine. Yeah, great guy. And I remember, you know, Colonel Allen West, you did a walkaway video years ago as well. So I'm sure you're familiar with that. And, you know, so I've, you know, always been involved on that level. And I saw from walkaway, what I learned from that is the power in just being in New York. One of the reasons I felt that walkaway got so much traction was, I mean, it was a great movement, a very strong message. So don't get me wrong. What Brandon did was amazing. But also what helped and benefit him was him being in New York. A lot of people, I realized how many people watch New York when you're involved in something in New York. And compared to, I lived over the East Coast. I lived in Georgia, I lived in Maryland, you know, lived in Florida for a couple of years. And New York is the one place where I've been a part of something that was happening. And it just gained traction around the whole entire country. Like, boom, like a flame, like a moth of flame, like, boom, just caught it. And I watched it, like, wow. Like, and I, at first, when it happened, I was just like, it kind of took me a second to realize what was happening. And then I saw it, and I saw it again with the medical freedom movement happening here in New York, how it just, boom, I just, you know, it was getting low traction. Then when New York got it, boom, the rest of the country just, boom. So I said, a lot of people watch New York. So, you know, and I just feel, you know, when it comes to it, me stepping up, having my own brand for the past 5 years, being an activist and running for office now and just getting out there and really getting my voice heard, that people are just, if Jamal's going to try to play that game of avoiding and just hiding in the corner, he's not going to be able to, because people are just going to, the mainstream media is falling apart, and I'm glad to see it's falling apart. It's getting worse as time goes by until hopefully it eventually ends. But alternative news is taking over. And I wanted this happening for years, but now it's starting to see it happen. So I feel when we get to that point where you have these politicians on the left who are trying to avoid a debate because they're in a blue city or a blue area, and they know the mainstream media is not going to cover it, so they can use that to their advantage to avoid a debate or whatever, like Joe Biden did, in my opinion, in 2020 against Trump in a presidential election. You will not be able to do that because alternative news factors are going to be stepping up saying, hey, what about Christopher Wray? Hey, Christopher Wray, Christopher Wray. And if you won't debate somebody like me, then those news sources are going to cover me more than they're going to cover you. Yeah. Because they're going to want me to get my message out there, because they're going to see the mainstream media outlets not cover me at all and not help me out at all, which is not right. So I think that's the time where we're heading, and I'm hoping we are at that point now. That's kind of what I'm looking at on my end. Like, even if he tries to play that whole, I'm just going to avoid and, you know, not debate and just be quiet and hopefully nobody talks about it, I'm not going to sit back and be silent about it. I'm going to come out and use my platform and any other platforms that want to, you know, do interviews with me and talk with me. I'm going to, you know, use those as well to get my voice heard and say, if you guys want to debate, don't look at Christopher Wright and say, hey, this is the problem I have. This guy is not willing to debate. I'm here. I'm ready to go. You're hearing it here now. I'm going to be saying it till the last day up. You can set up the day to debate. I'm ready to debate. I'm willing to debate. I'm not backing down from nobody. I'm not hiding from any. There's nothing I want to hide from anybody. If anything, it's Jamal Bowman who has things he needs to hide. So if anybody's afraid to debate, it's going to be him on his end. And if that's the case, the American people need to know that you guys are struggling right here in New York, and there's a lot of things that you're being affected by, and there's a guy who's here to offer solutions. And if, you know, either A, I should have a platform to let you guys know what these solutions are, or B, if my solutions are incorrect, or if I'm giving RFI bad ideas, there needs to be somebody to step up to challenge my ideas to the public so I don't spread this false information to the or misinformation to the public. So that's what debate's all about. That's what we have debates for. So yeah. I'm here for New Yorkers, man. New Yorkers, I know how much New Yorkers out there need help right now. So I'm ready for it, man. It's just are the Democrats ready to step up and stop playing this game of hiding like our governor, Kathy Hochul, and while our city falls apart.
Well, I've always said that you don't win playing defense. You've got to go on offense. And it's so important that you get out there and you get your message out there. One of the important things in political races and campaigns is the financial resources to be able to do that. So please share with our viewers what your campaign website is and how they can get in touch with you and to provide support to your endeavor.
Yes, definitely, definitely. Okay, so if you go online and if you type in Chris Wright, and that's Wright like Wright Brothers, spelled with a W, W-R-I-G-H-T, for, and that's spelled out for, F-O-R, congress.com. So that's Chris Wright for congress.com. And for those wondering, Chris is spelled with C-H-R-I-S. So Chris Wright for congress.com. That'll take you to my website. And if when you go on that website, it'll take you to my main page. You're going to see a contribute symbol there. If you click on that contribute symbol, that's the best option you have to donate to my campaign. So any donations will be appreciated. Like I said, it's going to be a lot of hard work, uphill battling going on our end, being in New York and everything like that. But, you know, I'm willing to do whatever it takes to get out there and fight for my country, from, you know, the citizens of my state of New York, and help bring change, because this is going to be an important election year. I feel that this is a year where I feel a lot of Americans got to get out there and get involved. Because if we don't, you know, our country could go on a track that could be very difficult to bring back into our normalcy afterwards if we go the wrong direction. So,
Well, thank you so much, Chris. Go out there and solidify that Republican conservative base. Get, you know, a good percentage of those independents that are leaning toward constitutional conservatism. And I'm quite sure you have some disaffected Democrats out there that believe in our Judeo-Christian faith heritage, our families, our national security, education, and, of course, protecting of our national sovereignty and our borders. So thank you so very much for being with us here at the Steadfast and Loyal podcast. And you will have my support, so let your campaign team know anytime they want to contact me. I'll be here and give you this platform as well. And ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining us on this episode of the Steadfast and Loyal podcast. Please go and look up Chris Wright for congress.com, Chris, C-H-R-I-S-W-R-I-G-H-T-F-O-R, congress.com, running against an uber Marxist radical in Jamal Bowman there in New York. And we can send a message to the left that we are going to compete against them no matter what the district is, no matter where it is. And I think it's so important that Republicans start to take action in our major urban population centers, because that's where you see the greatest amount of failure of progressive leftist socialist policies. So if you like this podcast, please click the like button, share it with others. And until next time, steadfast and loyal. Before